out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's one, two, three strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Welcome to Slow Pitch, the podcast that takes sports movies too seriously, or perhaps not seriously enough. We're your hosts.
Satisfaction.
It was that?
Sean Williams. That's from when they're in the sauna. They're in the sauna, and something like Mac Davis says something along the lines of like, "What do you get from the game?" And Nick Nolte goes, "Satisfaction." Something like that.
There were a lot of grunts and guffaws in this movie, and I thought that might have been the guy who I thought was Ogre in Revenge of the Nerds.
No, that was Nick Nolte. That was a star.
And Brad Etherly, listen, I couldn't come up with a quote because it was all R-rated. Every single line was R-rated.
Yeah.
So we're just two guys who consider watching sports movies a type of aerobic exercise. Today's episode is a review of the 1979 classic, North Dallas 40.
This movie felt very 1979 to me.
It did. We were alive in this period. Like this
we
was.
We were, but.
This is our life. We were small, but like the things that were going on in this movie happened in real life to some degree.
Yeah. Well, the thing that I kept thinking about was like, what was it like to be Nick Nolte in 1979? Like you show up on the Johnny Carson show, and just sort of shoot the breeze with Johnny for a while, and then you probably go get a cocktail at some trendy Hollywood lounge, and there's women hitting on you all the time. I feel like being a star was a better gig in 1979 than it is now. Cause you didn't have social media to worry about. Like, I don't think cancel culture was a thing at all.
No.
You're just like,
I think what gets people canceled now was celebrated back then.
probably. Well, and here's the other thing too. Like now I feel like if you were asked to play a NFL wide receiver in a movie, you might do a couple of sit-ups between landing the gig and the beginning of shooting. Nick Nolte was not doing that. And I understand that the character smokes cigarettes and drinks beer and everything, but yeah, he didn't seem to care about any of that.
He smoked the most heaters per capita in a film than anybody else ever has. And yeah, he was supposed to be a professional athlete.
Yeah. I feel like now that character would be played by, I don't know, maybe Michael B. Jordan or somebody along those lines.
Sure.
And even if they have demons that they're wrestling with, I feel like they're still going to have chiseled abs and defined guns and all that stuff.
Oh yeah, no, the amount of pasty white doughy bodies and the comfortableness with which they were willing to be shown.
I know. And the perms, like how many, what's the NFL record for perm haircuts on a team? Like this, the North Dallas Bulls have like 17 players with perms.
And they all like turn into sideburns as they come down in front of their ears.
Yeah.
That's amazing. From the very beginning, when you see all these guys at this party dancing to disco, first of all, I think there's three African Americans on this entire football team, which seems like it's a
highly unlikely
for even 1979. By then it was very, very integrated, but you got these white guys doing the hustle basically at this. I was watching this and I mean I feel like that first party scene took about 30 minutes of the beginning of the movie, and it was wild. I was shocked.
Yeah, that made the like weird science party scene seem like a knitting club or something.
Yeah, I couldn't get if it took a long time for me to kind of get what Nick Nolte's character, because he seemed kind of aloof, but I couldn't tell if he didn't care, if he didn't want to be there. What I could not figure out what his thing was.
Yeah, and I don't want to jump to the end of the movie too quickly, but sure. I was unaware that he had a nickname until the last minute of the movie.
And what was that nickname?
It was apparently it was Poot.
Hey, Poot!
Like, Mike Davis just out of nowhere starts calling this man Poot, and I was like, yeah. What? I was like, we haven't heard that at all this entire movie.
It's a 2-hour movie, and about an hour and a half, you hear him start calling him Poot.
He's what, Daniel Elliott?
Phil Elliott.
Phil Elliott, yeah. Phil Elliott, yeah. For an hour and 45 minutes, and he's like, hey, Poot! Catch his football, Poot! And he calls him that like 7 times in the last minute.
Yeah, that was hilarious. I caught that too. I was like, wait a second. I'm pretty sure I would have caught Poot before now.
Well, and how did he get that nickname? Like, I want to know, is there going to be a prequel to North Dallas 40 where we learn how Nick Nolte got the name Poot?
Listen, some of the other stories that are told in this movie, I may not want to know how he came up with the name Poot, because this movie, I kind of felt bad watching it in a way. I was like, this movie, man, it would not get made today. It just hands down, I feel, I don't know, maybe it would. We're kind of at a period in time where gross out movies are kind of popular. And I feel like this was a way for a movie team to kind of show, a gross out movie all couched in this framework of a football team. And this is how a real football team looks and acts.
Yeah. And so what do you mean when you say gross out movie?
Well, the quote that you had satisfaction when they're in the ice chamber buckets or whatever you want to, the whirlpools, Mac Davis gives a very detailed, very lurid story to Poot. And he goes into a lot of things that I was surprised that a 1979 film would go into, to be honest with you. And I'm not even going to go into it all, but it was pretty graphic. It was basically his escapades with women, but one of the other team members were involved, who's supposed to be this pious Christian. And then anyway, pretty graphic details presented.
Yeah. Well, so when you say gross out movie, I think about maybe movies that are more trying to be funnier than this movie was.
Like, oh, definitely.
Like,
yeah.
40-Year-Old Virgin or American Pie or something. This one, I feel like it was trying to make a point about like how, what life in the NFL was like. And I know that this was loosely based off of Don Meredith. Or it was based off of the Cowboys of the 60s or something like that.
Yeah. So the writer of the movie, he wrote the screenplay, but he also wrote the source novel. His name was either Peter Gint or Peter Gent, G-E-N-T. And he was a wide receiver for those 60s Cowboys. And Don Meredith, his role, or I guess what's the actor's name? We've been saying his name. Mac Davis. His role was basically Don Meredith's, and the coaches, what it was supposed to be a representation of Tom Landry. So it's kind of showing what life was like in football. But I got to say, I don't know what do you think? Do you think that this was like an accurate portrayal of what football was like back then? That seemed crazy.
I obviously wouldn't know, but I feel like it was trying to tell us is, okay, these guys, their life is fast, and it is like they don't take care of themselves at all. And they're just pouring themselves into this lifestyle of being a football player. and soaking up every last bit of whatever it is that that this lifestyle offers. And sometimes that's debauchery, it's glory, it's all of these things. And these guys are just trying to live every minute of it before it's over. That's kind of so whether all of that stuff is accurate or not, I mean, I would assume it's not quite as bad as what we saw, especially some of the, like, just the blatantness of the, I guess you would call it assault on women. But what I thought the movie was trying to say was these guys are 100% entitled, and they're taking advantage of that as much as they can, you know, whether, and they've, to a certain extent, have thrown their morals out the window.
Yeah.
Their morals and their dignity out the window, I should say.
Yeah. I mean, we basically see in that opening party scene, one of the offensive linemen, unabashedly basically trying to rape a woman, and everybody there, at least the football players, are not going to stop him. And why? Just because he's bigger and meaner and tougher, they don't want to step in. And of course, Nick Nolte's got kind of eyes for this girl, and so he goes in and steps in. But yeah, I mean, it's just, it's kind of an onslaught of drugs, booze, sex, all these things that they are, yeah, they're not worried about. They seem to just kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Revel in. They revel in all this stuff. But they also don't know why they do it. I feel like that's also a key component. They're not really sure, especially the ones that are aging, which include Nick Nolte, Mac Davis, some of the linemen. It's like they're wrestling with, why are we even doing this? So this movie reminded me of like three other movies. First of all, I thought that, like I said, I thought that there was a little bit of Revenge of the Nerds kind of. I really thought I was going to hear a nerds chant during that party. But it also reminded me of like a football version of Major League in a way. I mean, it was like this hodgepodge of crazy characters all meshed together in this one team. Now, Major League was, I feel like, 100% trying to be like a comedy, nothing too serious about it. Where this one was, I think it was supposed to be comedic, but I found it just being like this really intense drama.
Well, yeah, they both Major League and this movie, it's kind of like the players are sort of battling the corrupt ownership of the sports franchise.
Yeah. And then the last thing is, it reminded me of For the Love of the Game, where these guys are getting older. They're not quite ready to hang it up, but they're not really sure why they're holding on. And so it was interesting to see this movie kind of, and seeing those movies that have come later and knowing that those movies are out there, kind of seeing this one as something that kind of tackled that stuff first. But
so what, what do we think Nick Nolte's 40 time is as a NFL wide receiver? I'm thinking it's about 7-2.
You're getting back to the light subjects.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay. It's okay. I'm a downer. Nick Nolte, holy cow. Like, you know, he was almost 40 when this was shot.
Yeah.
It has to be above 7 seconds, right?
Well, okay. Yeah. I mean, just that when they show him running the routes, I mean, it takes him like he breaks on a route at like a glacial speed to sort of making his turn and everything. And I also did notice that there were really only three football scenes in this entire movie. And one of them takes place in a gymnasium.
Well, and it's really, I mean, two practices kind of, and then a game. I mean, there's only really one game they show flashbacks to a game that we never see where Nick Nolte drops a pass and then he redeems himself by catching it, but in the end. But yeah, it's minimal football coverage in this movie. More than The Last Boy Scout, at least.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of minimal coverage, Nick Nolte's face mask was one bar. Yeah, it was Gary Anderson. Did he borrow Gary Anderson's helmet?
Why was he wearing a field goal kicker's face mask?
Yeah. At what point? I guess it was at some point in the 80s when they insisted that football players have more than one bar going across their face. And here's the other thing. Has the one bar ever stopped a fist or whatever from making it through the face mask? I mean, like, what's that protecting you from?
That seems like a lot of broken noses and loose teeth.
Because, do you remember Gary Anderson?
Oh, yeah. The Vikings field goal kicker, right?
Yeah, and he kicked for the Titans, too.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, yeah.
But his face mask, like, sometimes you can't see him because I'm pointing, but it would, like, go down around his chin. It was like another chin strap. Yeah, it was like a metal chin strap that, you know, he just was like, all right, am I ready to kick a field goal now? With this thing, like, dangling below his chin. So it was useless.
Since we're talking about equipment and things like that and the uniform, let's talk about the practice sweats. Somehow defying nature in both being too tight and extremely baggy at the same time.
Yeah. Well, and I texted you while I was watching this movie because a fight breaks out at one of the practices. And I was uncertain what they were trying to say with this movie or with this scene exactly, other than this fight breaks out between a black player and a white player, right?
Yeah, yeah. All I know is that they had a little bit of history in the locker room, but it just seemed like the white player, he was kind of a crazy lineman. He just seemed to be angry at everybody except his best friend, O.W.
Yeah, well, okay. I'm getting really sidetracked here, but did you at any point in this movie wonder why it's called North Dallas 40?
Well, I did see why it's named North Dallas 40. Did you see?
I think I saw, but I still didn't understand it.
I didn't really understand it, except for I think that when we were at Harding University, we had very limited parking next to the dorm. And if you had to park over by the gymnasium, which was across the street, and you had to walk a total of about 100 yards, we called that the back 40, right? Because that was back. Mm-hmm. It was way back there. And the author in the book apparently describes that in the 60s for the Cowboys, the African-American players were not allowed to live near the practice field or something like that. And the white players were, the African-American players had to live in housing that was much further back. And so hence the North Dallas 40.
Great. That's great. Why isn't this movie about race?
It's not at all.
They sort of allude to it in this practice that we're talking about. And then, but that's it. Like, that's it. It's about Nick Nolte fighting against the man, quote unquote, but yet the whole title is based off of something that is racial. That's the thing that I was unable to get to the bottom of, and it never made sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, I never understood the title of this movie. I just figured it had something to do with, I just never understood it, and it doesn't make any sense still. I knew, like we talked about at the end of last episode, just taking a look at the poster, you can tell that they're having a good time.
Yeah.
And so I just figured it had something to do with having a good time or something like that, but it does not get explained at all.
If you know why this movie is called North Dallas 40, please call in at 1-800-555-SLOW.
Yeah. So the other thing, other than the tights, the lack, or the not the tights, the tight fitting, well, the tight fitting. Well, you were going to say something. You were going to say something about that fight.
They're fighting, and they cut to Nick Nolte. This, you know, and Nick Nolte is kind of, I guess they're trying to show that he's sort of above the fray while this fight's going on. And he's kind of sitting outside of this huddle and maybe even sitting on his helmet or something. And so he's in the background. In the foreground, you just see this lineman's torso. And his shorts are way too tight. When I was like being, you know, distracted by, you know, this practically 3D torso coming at me in this movie, I was like, okay, those shorts are way too tight. But then I was like, wait a second. It's also 1979. Maybe those weren't too tight. Maybe those were just 1979 shorts, and that's the way it was.
Yeah. When they're practicing in the gym, they're all wearing gray sweatpants that are like hiked all the way up, you know, to their navel.
Can we talk about this? You're an NFL team. Why are you practicing in a high school gym or college gym or whatever? Why is a professional football player wearing sweats that he just brought from home? And then Nick Nolte, he's wearing like a John Lennon hat type.
He's wearing like a beret type thing.
Yeah.
Throughout the whole movie, every practice, he's wearing that beret type hat.
My theory is that that has nothing to do with the character. Nick Nolte just liked the way he looked in that hat. And he was like, I'm going to practice for this NFL team wearing my hat. And you can't tell me a thing about it.
Yeah, it was a bizarre, like I think they were also trying to show that he was kind of a cool cat. Like he didn't really care about all the other, like, I mean, at the very beginning, Mac Davis tells him, you got to learn how to play the game. And I'm not talking about the game. He kind of just wants to do his own thing. He wants to play and he wants to do well because he's always trying to get the starting job. And he feels like he should, but he doesn't do anything that the coach, whose name is B.A.,
like 18 B.A.
That's all I kept thinking about. You know, he's not trying to impress him at all. He doesn't care. If he impresses him, fine. If he doesn't, that's fine too. And so I think that he just is shown as just this kind of 1970s cool cat who just is going to, you know, buck what the coaches say and just do his own thing. And it's kind of a strange dichotomy of wanting to play, but not caring if the coaches think you're good enough to play. So it was a hard movie for me to grasp as far as to like what Nick Nolte's character wanted, really. And I think that may be the end of the story, is that he didn't really know, because he, you know, he tried to start building that ranch and he never did get past that. So
yeah, well, and that's, I mean, that was one scene. Does he refer to that ranch other than when they go to it and then at the very end?
No, that's it.
And then his love interest, the girl he meets at the party, which is not the same girl that he sleeps with.
No, I was so confused by the love story.
Okay, this is a casting issue because, and you know, granted, it was 1979, things were probably different, but the woman that he beds day after the game, I guess.
Yeah.
Looks way too similar to the girl that he meets at the party. And I couldn't, like, I was like, wait a second, was that same girl? Because I couldn't tell.
The only reason I thought it was different was because he met that girl at her place, which, okay, let's start from the beginning. He meets her at the party, five minutes into the movie, okay?
Yep.
Meets her at the party, saves her from getting raped from
Billy Bob.
Joe Bob.
Yeah. Billy Bob's in Varsity Blues.
Joe Bob. And then then she leaves and I think Mac Davis and him go off to the side and have this conversation. And he sees that girl in a window, I guess in a house next door or something. So she just was a next door neighbor who decided to come to this professional football team's party. I was so confused. And then he just goes over to her house and basically invites himself in and then promptly falls asleep while holding a cigarette in his fingers. Then the next thing you know, he's at another house.
Yeah. And by the way, she doesn't call the cops or anything.
She wraps a blanket around him and tucks him in and then goes back to reading Mice and Men. So
listen. Yeah. All you single guys, if you're taking notes, just show up drunk with a cigarette between your fingers. And yeah. You're golden.
Well, but then and her house is like very 1970s kind of decoration, right? It's yellow and orange and brown hues and stuff like that. Then the next day he shows up at the front door of this house that's completely clean and white and, just very bright, and then rolls around in the bed with her for a little while.
Yeah.
And I was so confused as to who she was supposed to be with. She says she's about to marry somebody, or she's decided that she's going to marry somebody. Turns out that that's the owner's brother, who's Dabney Coleman, I think.
Oh, wait. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. This all gets explained at the end, but not well. So I had to go back and look at the plot and figure out what was going on.
I was hoping, when I saw, the fact that Dabney Coleman showed up in this movie, I was like, please, in my mind, that's the boss from 9 to 5, maybe he just switched jobs. Because he was kind of a jerk in this movie and he's a jerk in that movie.
Yeah, no, I was hoping he'd have a little bit more. I think Dabney Coleman's hilarious. All that to say, that all happens within 15 minutes of the movie. Where I got confused was, you never see that first girl again at first, for an hour. There's no talk about her. There's no going back to her. The next time you see her, she's in bed looking like she's asleep and you hear some grunting. She gets up like she's confused and sees Nick Nolte shirtless, doughy belly just hanging out doing some stretches. And then he gets in bed with her. And I'm like, whoa, what happened here? There was no story about these two at all for an hour. And now he's just jumping into bed with her.
This is making me feel so much better, because I was just like, maybe I'm dumb that I can't follow what's going on here. And I can't tell these two different women apart, because they both are brunettes who are, similar size and look. Yeah, it was super confusing.
Well,
and you just blew my mind telling me that was Dabney Coleman's wife.
Well, it was at least, I guess they were maybe dating. They weren't married. She told Nick Nolte that she was going to get married to him. But you didn't know who that was at the time. She said his name. And so the only reason I know this is because I had to go back and look up, because all of this culminates to the end, which we can get to now, but we can still talk about what happens throughout the movie. But Poot scores a touchdown in this big game against Chicago.
Do they ever explain why it's a big game?
No, we don't know if it's the last game of the season. They're acting like it's going to get them into the playoffs or something like that, but they don't explain. It's the only game we see, and they don't explain why it's a big game, but it's a big game. And so
That's played in a mall parking lot in front of no fans. Brad and I were texting about this while I was watching this movie. I was like, why are there no fans? When you look, it looks like they're just playing in a random field. Fans, but it's just black.
Black.
Yeah.
Nothing past the sidelines or the end zones, but they're down 14-7 at the end of the game. And he catches a touchdown pass, Poot. And, of course the field is muddy. It's been raining. So everybody's, got mud on them, ball slippery. Well, when they go to kick the extra point, the holder misses the ball and it slips out of his hands and they lose by 1 point. So he's feeling pretty good. He's, he caught this pass. Everybody's happy for him. He's happy for himself. And then he's got this meeting with the owners the next day or whatever. And I guess this is what completely did not make sense to me. They call him in. They've got like some investigators who have been following him. And they,
what?
I know.
I'm so confused.
It was so confusing. And they found, you know, weed in his apartment, which can they just go into his house and search? <Well, laughs> like they didn't have a warrant or anything. I don't know. But
yeah, I don't know if any of that would hold up in court.
But then they apparently followed him to that second girl's house who was going to get married to Dabney Coleman. And
hold up. I have one of those cork boards that I'm have a red yes. string and I'm tying it around thumbtacks so I can follow this. Okay.
That was a crazy for this to be such of like, it's like a classic movie in the sports world. Yeah. It was the most confusing thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Especially at the end. And they mention her name and Nick Nolte gets up and like is ready to fight the whole room. But then the coach is over there in the corner and they have a whole conversation about what's going on. It was essentially, they were going to suspend him, I guess, because he got caught sleeping with the owner's little brother's girlfriend.
Okay. Sure. I mean, I was sort of just staring at the screen, smiling and nodding like, okay, yeah, he's in trouble. Why? I don't know.
It was the weirdest thing. And then to preempt the suspension, he just quits. And he kind of gets what he wants. I think that it's been shown that he's not really into it anymore. And he doesn't really know why he's continuing to do this. So in the end, he kind of gets to quit and be free and he gets to do what he wants. So I guess that's build a ranch. And that's not in Texas. Those hills, those mountains are not in Texas.
No, not at all. Well, and so when he walks out of the office after he's just quit the football team in a city that clearly is Los Angeles, do we know why? I know it's played by Mac Davis. What's the quarterback's name?
Oh, his name is Seth Maxwell.
Maxwell. So yeah, why is he when he walks out of the office? Why is quarterback Maxwell dressed like Jim Carrey from Dumb and Dumber after they found the $1 million up in Aspen or whatever? You know what I'm talking about? Like
he's wearing like that brown rawhide vest sheepskin coming out.
he's got on Jim Carrey's ski outfit essentially from Dumb and Dumber. It's the most out of place, ridiculous thing.
Well,
like even in Dallas in 1979, while the show Dallas is big, that seemed like a bit much.
Yeah. The other thing that I thought was funny, all of these guys, of course, they're professional football players playing for Dallas. They all sounded like they were from Dallas. They all had Southern accents, you know? And I was like, they're not all going to be from Dallas if they're playing for the professional Dallas team.
Yeah.
And Mac Davis was no exception. He was maybe the most Dallas of all.
Yeah.
Except for that perm.
Yeah. And at the very end, so the way the movie just ends bizarrely to me too. Like, cause like you said, he comes out and I'm confused. I'm like, okay, he's in trouble. Why is he in trouble? Maybe the next 15 minutes of the movie will help me understand what just happened. No, he walks out, has a brief conversation with the quarterback. As he's walking away, the quarterback says, hey, you know, catch, you know, throws him a pass because he's has a football on him for some reason.
Always.
Yeah. And Nick Nolte just lets the pass hit him in the chest and roll credits because that's the end of the movie right there.
Freeze frame right there with his arms wide open. Well, I can tell you this. It seemed like there was another player implicated in that meeting with drugs and nefarious other business, but the investigators were not giving his name, and that was Mac Davis. And so, because I guess the idea is that he, as the quarterback, the star quarterback, was indispensable to the team, whereas Nick Nolte was an aging wide receiver who, even though had caught two almost game-winning passes in the last, 2 weeks, was deemed being able to be sacrificed for the team for whatever reason. So, so when he saw him outside, Mac was like, did they mention my name? And he was like, no, it was left out. But anyways, it doesn't make sense.
Sorry to distract. We do need to post a picture of him in that outfit to our Instagram account so that people know just how ridiculous it is.
Yeah, I'll try
whenever
to find
whenever this airs months from now.
Yeah, a year from now. I'll try to find one. But let me also talk about the lack. We kind of talked about it briefly, but we haven't kind of gone into it. The amount of male skin that is shown in this movie might be the highest I've ever seen.
Well, in the locker room before the game at Chicago, I think I texted you because you were like, hey, where are you at in the movie? And I was like, well, a guy wearing a hair sweater just walked into this locker room. I mean, like I couldn't see any skin through this guy's chest, arm, and back hair. Like it was the most incredible thing I'd ever seen.
And the funny thing is that there's a scene in the middle of the movie where they're all in the locker room and there are a lot of male buns being shown as they walk in and out of frame. And Mac Davis is he's no different. He walks into frame, buns just hanging out there, but he does a deft maneuver in front of a ice chest and not wearing anything, but the ice chest is blocking the view, thank goodness. And he starts flinging like beers to everybody in the locker room. That hairy gorilla guy walks into frame and there is a complete line of demarcation at his waist. Hair above, not a hair below. It was the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life.
It's like it's sort of like a poodle when you think about it. Like,
you expect that hair to go all the way down. It does not.
Yeah, because there's a cutoff. Very bizarre.
Oh man, yeah, it was a lot of male buns, a lot of buns.
I'm slightly disturbed that you've called them buns so many times.
What else am I going to call them? My children call them buttocks now. They think it's hilarious to call them buttocks. So I could say that. There is a scene. First of all, the opening scene. We've talked about the movie, but the actual opening scene is where Nick Nolte's in bed and his alarm clock goes off and he pops a few pills and swigs some beer. And you can tell he's just beat up from head to toe. He's got cuts on his face. He's walking like he's, Frankenstein, and he runs a bath. And I was extremely nervous when he got in that bathtub that we were going to see all of Nick Nolte, but we didn't. But it starts off right away with freedom of Nick Nolte's skin. And then there's another scene later on where Mac Davis and Nick Nolte are in a sauna and they're wearing like very tiny towels.
Yeah.
But they're not just like covering, they're like spread eagle. Like those towels are an inch away from showing too much.
Well, that's the scene where that's the satisfaction scene.
Oh, satisfaction.
Because I thought you were talking about when they were in the whirlpool.
No, no. They're having a philosophical discussion about like why they still play football.
Gotcha.
And Mac Davis is wondering this and Nick Nolte's kind of completing his sentence and he goes, satisfaction. And so I was sort of imagining like, that taken out of context.
And well, his name is Poot.
Yeah.
Crazy movie. I am interested to see what you give it as a rating, because this is considered a classic sports movie. It is.
It's above eight. It's above 80% on Rotten Tomatoes,
which is crazy to me. It's at 84%. I've got it up because it does land in our Rotten Tomatoes top 150 at number 93, which is, I won't go through the whole list, but that is in between movies that we have seen so far. Number 117, Cool Runnings, and number 64, The Karate Kid. So it's in there. One I missed, and I can't believe it because it's such a fan favorite. Last week, number 142, barely sneaking in there, is Air Bud.
Oh.
Yeah.
So where was this movie?
This was 93. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
so let me get the rating system. Or go ahead. Were you about to go into your rating, or
no? I was wondering. I'm trying to figure out why the critics liked it so much. Other than it was a different time, and maybe they, you know, we've sort of seen movies that are like this, you know, like The Program or something like that, where we're sort of dealing with similar subject matter. And Rocky had just come out 3 years before this. And I think Rocky II may have come out by this point. And so I don't know, maybe it was getting some credit for being a little bit of an anti-Rocky movie where the sport is not being heralded, or triumph in the sport is not being heralded. I don't know. I'm just sort of grasping at straws as to why critics love this.
I can't find it right now, but I know that I saw a quote from Roger Ebert saying that basically the practice and training scenes, or I should say the camaraderie of the football team was very accurately portrayed, but the game itself and the tension that it brought was like on another level as far as accuracy of. And I thought, man, was it really that bad in 1979? Because it did not seem like they. I will say this. The 10 minutes or so leading up to the game against Chicago, I felt was done well as far as kind of showing how each player, they kind of pan around. There's like five or six players that we've kind of gotten to know over the period of the film, and they kind of show. You know, one guy's just mercilessly beating the steel cage, getting pumped up like, you know, some people might. Some guys are more sedate and they're just kind of thinking about, one guy's asleep, you know, Nick Nolte's smoking a cigarette. So, you know, which, by the way, there is a trivia on the IMDb page that says, to prepare for his role as an NFL footballer, actor Nick Nolte underwent a rigorous training schedule for several weeks with professional NFL
false footballers. Fake news. Fake news. There's just no way. There's absolutely no way. Yes, we were in an era before. Well, first off, let's back up. Like, they kick off the movie by showing that he does not take care of his body. He's smoking. He's drinking Jack Daniels. They establish later that he smokes marijuana and all that stuff. He is not treating his body as a temple at all. And so I feel like that's fake, because why would Nick Nolte read this script and be like, oh, I've got to be in peak physical condition? And I realize I'm sort of contradicting something I was joking about earlier, saying that, you know, he's not, but like the character is not. The character's a little washed up.
Yeah, definitely. He's got a little front porch hanging over those football pants, and he's pretty proud of it. It looks like,
yeah.
I will say that scene where they were all kind of getting ready for the game was pretty interesting to see each individual kind of preparing in their own way. And I felt like it wasn't a quick shot either. It kind of let it linger a little bit and let you really kind of get into how this person was actually kind of feeling as they were about to get get in this big game. But I have to disagree with Ebert. I mean, you know, you've got Mac and Poot. I call him Mac David, is whatever his character's name is. Mm-hmm. And they had a camaraderie. Other than that, I didn't really see the team meshing or having a camaraderie. But anyways, I think that there was a realness that in 1979 had never kind of been seen before. And maybe this was what the critics saw. But anyways, it seems to still be a popular sports movie.
Yeah, well, and I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of thumbing through a Wikipedia page here, but I don't know how many sports movies had really come out before 1979. Yeah. What I was getting ready to say was, like, we're going back to Nick Nolte's physique. I think the 80s were the year that ushered in the chiseled movie star. You know, like, look at Sylvester Stallone in the first two Rockies. Then look at him in Rockies 3 and 4. Like,
sure.
Yeah. It's like
even Rambo.
Like granite. Yeah.
The first Rambo, he just looks like a normal dude, you know? And by Rambo 3, he looks like an action figure.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much.
All right. Well, let's go to our rating.
He's oiled up too.
Yeah.
He started doing that. And like to this day, The Rock. Every time he's in a movie, like, I feel like there's just butter all over him.
Baby oil all over.
Yeah.
Well, let's go to our rating system. I had two, and we kind of talked about both of them, but I want to rate this movie on a scale of 1 to 5 white guy perms. Or, you, like I said, you can always go lower than 1. You can go -50 if you want, but up to 5. White guy perms.
5 white guy perms. Okay. Ooh, man. All right. I'm going to give it 2.5, 2 full perms, 1 cut down the middle perm of the Mike Brady season 4 variety. Yeah, there were some interesting things about the movie. It, you know, if this is a glimpse into what life as an NFLer was in the 60s or 70s, even if it's a little exaggerated, I think that's somewhat fascinating. You know, sort of fascinating that these guys could take such horrible care of themselves and still, you know, manage to perform at their peak athletically. That's kind of interesting to me. I think Nick Nolte is as much trouble as he's had. He's a good actor. I feel like he was asked to sort of repeat this performance to some degree in Blue Chips, which I'm looking forward to doing, where he's a beleaguered, instead of athlete, coach, kind of fighting against the system. But it is as interesting as some parts were, as we well established, I could not follow this movie to save my life. There were things that were unclear in it. That may mean that I'm stupid. I'm fully ready to accept that answer, but it was weird. And then, yeah, like there was some disturbing things in it as well.
Yeah. I'm going to give it 1 white guy, Bernie Kosar perm. It was, to me, I mean, I just did not understand what made this a classic football movie. And like you said, if that makes me dense, then perhaps that's the case, but it seemed disjointed. I couldn't really follow along with the plot, much less Nick Nolte's character and what his story was. The love interest seemed superfluous, if at best. I mean, why even have that? And then the ending was as confusing a last 15 minutes as I've ever seen in a movie. Like, I feel like they could have stopped it at the missed field goal and everybody kind of going their own way. That last 15 minutes just seemed like it should have met the cutting room floor, because it didn't make any sense to me at all. But I guess the ending was that he decides he's going to leave on his own terms, and he's basically free from everything that football life has kind of, you know, he's addicted to pills, he's addicted to booze, he can't hardly walk straight. But this gives him the chance to cleanse his palate of all of that. So maybe that's, it just seems like it could have been done in a whole lot better way. So yeah, I'm going to give it one Bernie Kosar perm because I just did not care for it. And I really wanted it to end about 30 minutes before it did. So
do you think we could get Bernie Kosar in this podcast?
I'm going to reach out to him. I'm going to get him on Twitter and see if he can, what's a good movie for him to comment on.
Is there a movie about the Cleveland Browns at all?
The Express?
Is that?
I think it's not his era, but I think I would say it is.
I would say even Major League, because that speaks to the Cleveland sports fan and their desperation for a championship.
Yeah, I'll reach out to Bernie and his people and see if we can get him. All right, let's figure out what we're going to watch next.
All right, sports movie Wheel of Death. Let's spin it.
The sports movie Wheel of Death has given us. Okay. So this is a remake, so we have to watch the original.
Oh, okay.
Care to guess?
A remake, is it?
The remake was Herbie? 2005. Is it Herbie? No.
Oh, that was a pretty good guess, though, if I guessed Herbie. Because didn't the Lindsay Lohan Herbie
come around then? Yeah. I don't think we have any Herbies in the list.
It's car racing.
I know. Monte Carlo? NASCAR. Come on.
Is that? That's not NASCAR. That's something else. But
no, this movie was, the remake was made in 2005. The original was made in the 70s.
Oh, okay. Hold on. Let me see if I can.
74.
74. What's the sport?
Football.
Oh, man. Two football movies in a row. Oh, Longest Yard.
Yep. There you go. Burt Reynolds. Here we come.
Wow. That's so ironic that we're getting two 1970s football movies right in a row.
Yeah, now I'm excited to see the original Longest Yard. I haven't seen it in a while, so I'm excited to see that. All right, well, thanks again for listening. We're gonna ask you to rate and review, to subscribe if you haven't. Tell a friend, burn your phone after listening because you can't stand us. Whatever you want to do.
Behind the United States, what country are we getting the most listeners in?
Well, for a while, Peru.
That makes sense. That makes 100% sense.
We have a devoted listener from Paris.
Okay.
And we have, I think, two devoted listeners from Frankfurt, Germany.
Well, when you say we have a devoted listener in Paris, like I'm imagining there's a French party going on. And they like found a random American podcast to make fun of how stupid Americans are. And they're like, look how stupid the Americans are, you know, and they're like, play. And we're talking about the Karate Kid or something. And everyone's like, ah, they are stupid.
Yes. Can you do that with a German accent?
No. I could barely do it with a French. I feel like everything sort of comes out like Italian when I try to do it.
I can't do it. Everything ends up sounding like, my only good accent that I can do is a British accent, but it's only for a certain phrase.
Oh, what is that?
Have a spot of tea.
Wait, what? Oh, spot of tea. Yeah.
Oh, maybe it wasn't that good. Maybe it sounds better in my head. Hello, governor. Have a spot of tea.
Yeah, can you rate and review Brad's British accent?
Oh, man. Thanks for listening to Slow Pitch. We'll see you next time with The Longest Yard.
See ya.
Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back. Let me root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
satisfaction.